Hello, everyone, and welcome to World News. And now, more than 2 weeks on since Israel launched its deadly onslaught on Gaza, and there is no end in sight to regime's atrocities against Palestinians. At least 53 were killed in Israeli strikes on Gaza's residential areas early Saturday, pushing overall death toll to more than 4,100 since regime's aggression started. More than 1,000 people are still missing as well, presumed under rubble. Meanwhile, the UN Relief Agency for Palestinian Refugees, known as UNRWA, said 17 of its staff members are killed in this conflict so far. This all comes as the Rafah border crossing between Egypt and Gaza is reopened and aid trucks have been allowed into the besieged Palestinian territory. However, the media office of the Gaza government said in a statement that limited amount of relief aid will not ease the humanitarian situation in the coastal Palestinian territory. Now, joining us from Beirut is Mariam Saleh to get the latest in a very volatile situation taking place at the same time along the Lebanese border. Mariam, what can you tell us?
Well, actually, I'm not in Beirut. I'm in South Lebanon near the border, the occupied Palestinian territories. And here we are in one of the villages that basically is in the vicinity of the border. We are in the village of Rubat Latin. And here we have one of the instances of the Israeli shellings where the Israelis shelled two bombs into one of the houses right in the middle of the village. This is something new here. Most of the houses that have been destroyed that were targeted by the Israelis were mostly near the border or near the areas or the posts that Hezbollah has been targeting. However, this time you have one of the houses that is on the border, some of the furniture that has flown away from the house, and there's also some shrapnel and the remnants of two rockets, it seems to be, in this house. This is a house that is comprised of several families. The owner of the house's son is the head of the municipality, so basically they believe that this is, it seems to be some sort of a personal targeting, but here this house has just been renovated and enlarged to fit all the family. The family lives in Beirut, but they do come to visit this house, and sometimes there are children, there are grandchildren. You have the grandparents living here with their with one of their sons, and they also have other children that come from the city with their children. So basically, you can have some 20 people in this house. When it was targeted, people, of course, around 3 a.m., they said they heard a big explosion, and they went to see and realized that this was one of the houses that was destroyed. Just now, we were told that we need to leave the area, but we needed to show you firsthand what is happening here, that Israel seems to have trespassed and moved further off in the general scope, if we may say, of its targeting. Now, at the same time, Hezbollah has not stopped their operations. They continue with these, and what seems to be, it's growing to a long-term war of attrition. We witnessed this during the Israeli occupation of these villages. Many of these villages were under occupation for over 20 years, and so basically we relate very much to that sort of thing. And at the same time, life throughout Lebanon seems to have gone back to normal, but at the same time that war continues, Hezbollah has very precisely hit targets all along the southern border, sometimes simultaneously, more than one post, and they have specifically targeted tanks, they have targeted armored vehicles, they have targeted also surveillance towers and radars, which is considered very significant when you talk about the intelligence war, since the war between Hezbollah and Israel has always not only been military, it has also been intelligence, also been something related to what is to everything that, of course, they have been fighting all along these years.
Okay, I've been told, Mariam, for concerns for your safety, to let you sign off and get out of the area, evacuate that area as soon as you can. Stay safe. Thanks for that update. Our own Mariam Saleh joining us from southern Lebanon. Meanwhile, Palestinian resistance groups have launched more attacks against Israel in retaliation for the regime's bombardment of Gaza. Military wing of Hamas, the Al-Qassam Brigades, launched missiles at the city of Tel Aviv. Israeli military positions in East Al-Quds were also targeted. Hamas had previously stated it can target anywhere in occupied territories. The resistance fighters entered Gaza envelope October 7th, following missile strikes, I should say, on Israeli targets under Operation Al-Aqsa Flood. At least 1,500 Israelis have been killed, nearly 5,000 injured since then. Hamas has launched a campaign in response to repeated Israeli desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the regime's crimes and aggression throughout the decades. The Palestinian Minister of Health has called on the international community to protect Al-Quds Hospital in Gaza after Israel orders its evacuation and a sign the facility will be bombed. Now, Mai Al-Qaila said the international community must take swift action to prevent another tragedy similar to Al-Ahli Hospital that took place after another evacuation order by the regime. Nearly 500 people died there after the hospital was bombed Tuesday. According to Palestinian officials, Al-Quds Hospital is housing over 400 patients and nearly 12,000 civilians who have taken refuge there. Israel has also notified aid agencies to evacuate 5 schools. Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah says it's targeted 3 Israeli bases with precision-guided munitions. In a statement, Hezbollah said strikes took place in Kafr Shuba and Shabo Farms region, said all the strikes hit the designated targets. This came after Israel carried out attacks on southern Lebanon. Areas witnessed exchanges of fire since 8th of October. That's a day after a major Palestinian operation against Israel. Recent clashes between Israeli forces and Hezbollah fighters have left over a dozen people dead. Earlier Friday, Israel said it will evacuate the town of Kiryat Shemona near the Lebanese border. Now joining us for some special coverage, Mr. Elijah Magnier, journalist and political analyst, joining us from Brussels. Hello, Elijah. Hope you're doing well out there in Brussels. Your thoughts on 15 days of unrelenting atrocities against the civilian population of the besieged Gaza Strip.
Thank you for having me. Well, these 15 days showed us a lot. Above all, and to start with, is the weakness of the Israeli army that has a very large firepower, but has very weak army when confronted with the Palestinian resistance who came out of Gaza and attacked the Gaza Brigade, that is one of the biggest, the largest, and most trained element of the Israeli army. And it was destroyed and wiped out in only a few hours. Moreover, it shows how the United States is not a good partner for peace, and how the Europeans and the West in general have no respect for human life and international laws unless it is concerned only Israel. So what's happening in Gaza today is violation of international laws, cutting water, food, electricity, fuel, and allowing only 20 trucks to come after 17 years for 2.3 million inhabitants. That's one truck for 110,000 Palestinians, when every day Gaza used to receive 500 trucks per day, and there were hardly enough to meet the needs of the population and the hospitals. So what we have, it's a genocide against the Palestinian population, with more than 4,500 killed and 13 to 14,000 wounded, and among these there are at least 1,700 to 1,800 children on their own. So the Israelis are not fighting Hamas. They're fighting these Palestinian population, and they want to trigger a second exodus after 1948, and they want to eliminate every single Palestinian. And that we have seen when Benjamin Netanyahu showed the map without any trace of Palestine at the United Nations when he went to give his speech. And one of his ministers, the finance minister, Smotrich, said that there is no place for Palestinian in Israel. So basically, we understand that that is the Israeli plan, and they're taking this as an advantage with the ultimate and unlimited U.S. and EU support to get rid of the Palestinians.
What our correspondent in London was telling us there, Elijah, is how hard a lot of these governments in the West are really persevering to try to push this narrative to conflate pro-Palestinian perspective and stance with anti-Semitism. And it basically, it's going over a lot of people's heads. They're seeing right through it. It worked and still does work, this pressure on a lot of people in the academic field and a lot of offices. We've seen people persecuted and prosecuted for supporting Palestinians, but somehow people have braved the elements and are still doing it regardless. Your thoughts on the, you know, a lot of these Western leaders trying to control the narrative and the fact that today, with thanks to basically our level of technology and information age that we're at, people are starting to get the bigger picture.
Well, there are two things. First of all, Joe Biden and Benjamin Netanyahu, because they are propagandists, and Biden does it out of a little bit of ignorance and or on purpose, I don't know, but they direct the conflict as a religious one between the Jew and the Muslims, which is very untrue and a complete lie, because Jews and Muslims and Christians live together since centuries and even before when Netanyahu or Joe Biden were born. Secondly, it is not a religious conflict, because the Palestinians, among the Palestinians, there are also Christians in Gaza, and the Israelis bomb their churches as they bomb the mosque. Thirdly, about the West, unfortunately, we feel extremely ashamed of what is happening here, to the point that here in Europe, there is no mention of Gaza. People don't know really that Gaza exists, apart from the first few hours when the Palestinians attack the cities and the settlements of the Israelis in the envelope of Gaza, outside Gaza, within 20 kilometers. After that, the whole news shut down, and nobody's talking about Gaza anymore, and they only portray what's happening to the Israelis. So all the thousands of civilians, Palestinians killed, have suddenly disappeared from the media, and nobody's talking about them. Even the police in France is interrogating and calling people who support the Palestinians, to the point that they want to revoke the French nationality of French citizens who were born in France, but because they have some ancestors that belong to Middle East or Africa. So we have a complete blind sight on what's happening with the Palestinians as a deliberate, undemocratic violation of the freedom of expression in Europe.
Thank you there, Elijah. Let me welcome, and do stay on the line, I'd like to welcome Angelo Giuliano, I should say, a political analyst joining us out of Hong Kong to our conversation. Hello, Angelo, and welcome to the program. Now, Angelo, to Elijah's point, he said people in the West hear very little of Gaza, know very little about their plight, their struggle, and what Gazans have been through for so many years now, considering with respect to their siege as well. While civilians in Gaza today are having Western bombs raining down on their heads by the Israeli regime, their predicament and the fact that so much effort goes on in the West to keep the Palestinian struggle and especially the plight of Gazans, basically keep their public ignorant to their plight.
It's a very good tool for the globalist elites. I think what is happening right now is we see clearly a complete disconnection between Western elites, Western media, and the population. And the good thing is that we still manage, average people still manage to get the real information of what is happening on the ground. But there are clearly complete disconnections because well, who controls the media, and who actually control our leaders? What is worrying is that not only the censorship, but also I think they will they are starting to having talks about laws that actually would be against what they call apology of terrorism. This is what we have already in France. In France, if you were to support Hamas, see, because Hamas is considered by France as being a terrorist organization, you would be labeled doing apology of terrorism. That is only one side, but I think what is the scariest moves that they are looking into is that anti-Zionist would be assimilated to anti-Semitism, and that would be a crime that would with very heavy penalty because of a hate crime. So this is what how they do. They try to suppress the information, and then they issue laws that actually will make it illegal to criticize the Zionist racist apartheid regime.
Okay, gentlemen, thank you both for joining us on the program. This extended conversation, Elijah Magnier from Brussels and Angelo Giuliano joining us out of Hong Kong. And we're following developments in the besieged Gaza Strip very closely. Continue to stay tuned, and goodbye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Muhammad Iqbal, also famously known as Allama Iqbal, was a famous poet, philosopher, lawyer, and politician. Muhammad Iqbal is called the spiritual father of Pakistan, as he is believed to be the inspiration behind the historical Pakistan movement, in which he was one of the few leaders who first conceived the idea of Pakistan as a different nation for the Muslims. Iqbal is Pakistan's national poet, and his birthday is a public holiday in Pakistan. Muhammad Iqbal, also known as Iqbal Lahori, is considered one of the most important figures in Urdu literature, with literary work in both the Urdu and Persian languages. Although Urdu poetry draws heavily on Persian idiom and imagery, Iqbal found Persian more suited to his thought and temperament, and a better means of communication to a wider audience in the Indian subcontinent as well as other countries of the Muslim world. At the end, more than half and nearly two-thirds of Iqbal's poetry was in Persian language. Stay with us as this week's program looks into this extraordinary man's life and legacy.
The fragrance of the companion shall take a nation to the companion. Sometimes childhood memories appear before my eyes like a pale pall of imagination. Among those rippling images there sails the craft of my thought towards the shore of silence, to anchor in the harbor of its own. I dwell on my existence. I want to decipher the Oriental thoughts and secrets, and to put an end to my bewilderment and self-alienation. I am a traveler, standing on the shore of thoughts. My aim, to pinpoint my lost identity. I am a traveler, walking on the road of human thoughts. My destination is the land of belief in oneself, in a bid to revive an identity which might no longer exist. It is an identity which, like a child's toy, is played with, but in a deadly way.
Some ignorant guys sent to the slaughterhouse of death every day thousands of innocent people because they are deeply buried in the marsh of their jejune ideas. In a way, there are two types of travels, a physical one, or going from one place to another, and a spiritual one, or transforming from one mood to another. Those embarking on the first type are many in number, and those embarking on the second type are much less. My travel is a mixture of both. Within the land and the sky, a travel in time to appreciate the ideas of an Eastern philosopher, namely Allama Muhammad Iqbal, the thinker, that if his thoughts were well understood, we would not witness the ignorant behaviors by Takfiri groups that are far from Islamic injunctions and humanity these days. Allama Iqbal wrote great mysteries in his books for his son, Javed Iqbal, and all others. As an old man, Javed knows it well whom his father was addressing. Javed talks to him like this.
Right now, I am 90 years old. You don't address people of my age. You address young people. You like them to believe what I say. I personally cannot fully understand you. I follow a path not wanted by you. Talk to me, who is 90 years old. You feel the elderly usually talk in a desperate way. You advise that one should not be desperate. The right man is hidden in you. Go on with your search. He will surely appear. You are saying the same thing. You have not visited me. I did my best. I searched for 90 years, but I did not find that right man. Where is he then? Tell me if you know.
I begin my journey right from here to the city of Sialkot, the birthplace of Iqbal. Perhaps in this travel, I would be able to show some special features of that righteous man. Today, Sialkot is a city in Punjab, Pakistan. The city, when Iqbal was born, was part of India.
Oh, you who are familiar with me, come with me to the childhood alleys. Tread on memory's pathway. Come with me to my intimate alleys. in my childhood home on roofs quite stranger to all noises. May they be merrily remembered. The period of harmony with existence and excellence. The pleasant period of being with a companion, with all its liveliness. During all the year's generous moments, those alleys full of love, the splash of pure wafers.
ये वो घर है जहाँ अल्लामा इकबाल 9 November 1877 को सुबह 5
Here is the very room wherein Iqbal was born on the 9th of November 1877 at 5:14 a.m.
उन्होंने इस घर की इब्तिदा की 6 फरवरी 1861
The house here was built by his grandfather Sheikh Muhammad Rafiq. He was the first to occupy the house. On the 6th of February 1861, he bought 3 small rooms and a house near here until Iqbal was born. Later, Iqbal's elder brother came here. The house has undergone no change since then.
Iqbal's ancestors were high-ranking Brahmins of Kashmir. They converted to Islam 500 years before Iqbal was born. The family was called Siparu, meaning educated. His father was a cloth dealer. Nur Muhammad's shop was frequented by great thinkers of Islamic sects. His mother, Imam Bibi, was also a religious woman. Iqbal had one brother and 4 sisters, all of them his senior.
Rooms were built before anything else in 1861. Iqbal's family prepared the first room for the wives. There, in that room, you see a cradle and a chair.
Encouraged by his father, Muhammad Iqbal learned the Quran from his very childhood in Hisamuddin Mosque of Kashmiris. Basic lessons were learned at home, as Iqbal says this was the best period of his lifetime, because under his father's support, his thinking foundations became established. Sialkot's graveyard tells years later, when his father died, the story of Iqbal's attachment.
So many times I've asked myself, what is existence? From where does it take root? What a secret it is that has attracted thinkers' attention. I could not find answers to those questions. Then, many years later, when my thoughts expanded, I traveled back to my childhood to find answers to my questions. There it was my father who decided on the shape a thing should take. Years later, when unknown things became clear to me, I came to understand Mir Hassan's teachings. He talked to me about the Book of Life, but he did not mention the book's title. A condition set before me by him was this: to learn new sciences Europeans learn. It is only then that you come to know what the value of the Book of Life is. He was quite right. Years later, with all my heart, I came to fully know the Book of Life. The Book of Life, the Holy Quran, whose wisdom is eternal and solid. It is an illustration for life secrets. Its power makes the unfaithful faithful. To mankind, it is the only message. The bearer of it will enjoy the mercy of both worlds. Bandits turn into leaders just through its memorization. They become pious just with the help of this very book. He whose heart's pulsation is a result of the book's warmth, his restless way finds comfort just as does a pearl. Should you want to live a Muslim life, only through the Quran is this possible.
Sialkot, a city in northeastern Punjab province, located at the foot of the snow-clad Kashmiri Mountain. It was here, in this crowded city, where Allama Iqbal's first educational basis took root. Having received his first training by father and such a great teacher as Molina Mir Hassan, the young Muhammad entered Scotch Mission School to start his official education therein. The school's premises, against passage of centuries, keeps the same shape as it used to have.
He finished his high school here in 1891. Then in 1893, he completed his 10th grade, and it was here where he finally ended his high school education in 1895 and got his high school diploma.
Having finished his high school in Sialkot, Muhammad Iqbal found the city too small to give him an opportunity to fly higher up in the sky. Muhammad was 18 when he finished his pre-university courses with honors, receiving 2 academic gold medals. Admitted on a scholarship, he left Sialkot for Lahore as advised by his teacher Mir Hassan. Lahore was a city southwest of his birthplace, 125 kilometers away from it. Then Muhammad Iqbal went to Punjab University, one of Pakistan's oldest universities, established in 1882 by the British ruler of the Indian subcontinent in Lahore. There, the instruction language was English, though some lessons were taught in Urdu. Young Iqbal of Sialkot went there to continue his education. Very soon, he got so famous throughout the world due to his thoughts and his Persian Urdu poems. Known as Iqbal Lahori, he was destined to get his BA and MA here and composed his earliest poems.
Allama Iqbal bilashuba hamari islami duniya ka.
Undoubtedly, Iqbal is, for us in the world of Islam, a clear metaphor and a great name. Iqbal found an Islamic world, a special thought. At the present time, we are living in a place so blessed as it witnessed Iqbal, the learned, for 5 years. At a time when Iqbal arrived here from Sialkot to enroll for BA, the state university here had this one dormitory only. Iqbal lived here for 5 years. I mean, his presence here lasted about 5 years. He then enrolled for MA in philosophy. He completed his MA.
Iqbal, as it seems to me, went through 2 periods in his life, a wisdom period and a love period.
During the time Iqbal was still in the subcontinent, and when he had not yet left for the West, he was naturally well acquainted with Western philosophy, had deeply studied Hinduism and Islamic thoughts.
At that time, Iqbal was quite familiar with Indian mysticism, and the traces of that school of thought can be found in his poems.
He studied in depth our religion, and with such a deep knowledge, he left for the West.
There was no ending to the stories of my restlessness and abandoning similar places. I was 28 when recommended by my teacher, Sir Thomas Arnold, I left for Europe to continue my studies. Having a master's degree in philosophy, I had taught at the Oriental College, but going to England and starting study at Cambridge University for a doctorate in philosophy changed everything. Studying at Cambridge secured me opportunities to know better and more about Western philosophers. At the same time, I enrolled at the Faculty of Law to be able to get permission to act as attorney. The rest had no meaning to me. For that very year, I traveled to Hamburg, Germany, to do more research and finish my doctoral dissertation. For a whole year, I worked so hard to get fully familiar with philosophical foundations and to get my doctoral thesis finished. At that time, I met much of well-known philosophy teachers, such as the famous professor of philosophy, Max Neckrat, and the famous Orientalist, Reinhold Elien Nicholson.
He continued his university studies in Heidelberg, Germany, and became familiar with the thoughts and ideas of such philosophers as Nietzsche, Fichte, Schopenhauer, and the like. There were similarities between his thoughts and the thoughts of those learned men.
Iqbal continues to say that he was changing and thinking those days.
Interestingly
enough, Iqbal was influenced by Western philosophers. He adopted their thoughts and opinions. He received ideas from them, but mixed them with his own to create an independent thought system and called it own philosophy.
Having received his Doctor of Philosophy, Iqbal returned at the age of 31 to Lahore. Never did he hesitate to return home, contrary to some students of that time. He left England quickly. He was then licensed to practice attorneyship and became a member of Lahore Bar Association. 3 years later, he became a lecturer in philosophy at Lahore University. He resigned after a while to exclusively practice as an attorney. This way, he was able to freely publish his thoughts. He continuously thought about finding a way to awaken Muslims taken captive by colonialism.
All my life has been coincident with the Indian subcontinent's darkest days. British colonialism and now World War I. India was dominated by colonialism since the 18th century. But as World War I began in August 1914, a new form of cruelty began to cover my land. Indians went to fight a war wherein they had played no role. They were killed and killed for people who themselves were the main factor in bringing ruin and destruction to the whole world. Description of troubles brought about by those calamities is actually impossible.
In 1910 and 1911, and after World War I, we see a number of liberation movements. Muslims rose against British and European colonizers. So Iqbal found himself on a well-defined route. He started composing revolutionary poems.
After World War I, in 1918, and the fall of the Ottoman Empire, something had to be done quickly to save people of the tyranny imposed on them. I knew that a worldwide caliphate was no longer practicable. There was no agreement between Islamic unity and blind religious prejudice or extreme nationalistic ideas as promulgated
by colonial powers. Unwillingly, I engaged in political activities. I tried to raise public awareness to bring about self-reliance.
Allama ran for Punjab parliament election. As he said, he hated political activities and Muslims' needs forced him to enter the political arena. Consequently, he joined the Muslim League Party. He succeeded to become an MP for Punjab province for 3 years. During that time, he tried to solve Muslims' problems. Iqbal used to talk on such problems.
Allama Iqbal nurtured the wish for an independent Pakistan. He would say a new country, an Islamic country, would come into existence on the world map. The country's name, he would say, will be Pakistan. Iqbal did not give this name to a new country, but surely he had it as a Muslim country in mind.
During my lifetime, I liked those sleeping in the world of thought to wake up from their deep sleep. But sadly, the sleep is too deep. Therefore, I took refuge in the world of rhythmic words and meaningful poems to awaken the youths of this sorrowful nation in order to sail the craft of our thoughts to the shore of productivity. I was a young man when I found out that to weather horrible tempests and the enemy's lurking place, we had no way but recourse to the miracle of the last time. The Holy Quran, the book with miraculous words, which can be used as the best means to awaken thought and exalt the belief in self. The book is most succoring, particularly to the youth. I, who despair of the sages of old, have a word to say touching the day to come. Render my speech easy unto the young. Make my abyss for them attainable.
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم, brothers and sisters from all parts of the world. Welcome back to IRB English Radio. You're listening to the program For a Better Life. I am Bita, and once again, I have the honor to be at your service, sharing my point of view and ideas, opinions about everything with you in order to have a better life. So, in the last episode, specifically, we were talking about this actually because of emotions and the bad and good approach towards emotions, and in order to have a short and brief review on everything we talked about, I just have to tell you we talked about some factors that lead to an intelligent approach and thinking, okay? We talked about these important facts that we shouldn't make decisions fastly and rapidly and by haste or emotions. We shouldn't actually be impatient, and we have to make decisions based on patience, forbearance, and courage. We have to define our aim and purpose. And our reasoning should be based on facts and not on rumors. We talked about these problems of new social medias and so on, that the focus on emotions are too much, that we forget that reasoning and intellect are, you know, more important than just our own emotions. We're going to follow more factors that indicate an unreasonable approach to resolving issues. So let's keep it here, go for a short break, then we're going to come back. Stay tuned. Talking about the factors that indicate an unreasonable approach to resolving issues, we are using narrations, quotations, and stories from life of our infallibles and Ahl al-Bayt and also Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon them. And we're going to take important lessons. Thank you for being with me. Let's go for the factors. Number one, treating issues with force and stubbornness. Sometimes you just want to prove something to yourself, like you want to prove that you are right. You want to prove that you can make the right decisions at the moment. You want to prove this mere fact to yourself that you're enough, okay? And these are the things that will lead you to a stage of making decisions by emotions, by feelings, by haste, by impatience, and all of these bad things. So just don't do anything in your life with this force and stubbornness. Don't prove anything to yourself. You don't need it. You have to keep your intellect in a balanced way and go for some rational and reasonable ways to approach your issues. Number two, not accepting others' views. Sometimes you're so proud of yourself. It happens, I think, to every single of us, that we feel like so much proud of ourselves that we don't go for solutions. We don't go for consult. We don't go for talking to other people because we think we're enough. You see the paradoxical content here. The first factor I mentioned for you, one of the problems with that was thinking that you're not enough. And here we're talking about that you think you're enough, okay? So what should we do, being enough or not? The thing is, you have to feel enough at the moment. Your abilities, your beauty, your blessings, okay? Just look at the full half of the glass, okay? But you shouldn't feel like it's enough progress, it's enough development, it's enough thing for me. No, it's not. It's never enough. You have to go for that. You have to go for knowledge. You have to go for experience. You have to go for experiment. And all of these are necessary for your life, and it's not never enough. But you are enough at the moment. Don't forget the value of yourself and try to work on your self-esteem and self-confidence, which are two important things in everybody's life. Number three, viewing everyone with suspicion. Sometimes we have trust issues, which is completely normal in modern world with all these difficulties, with all the things that we are facing, especially on social medias, that we're facing people and we are actually listening to their stories. They are being cheated on, they are broken, they are heartbroken, they are this, they are that, and we feel like we cannot trust anyone anymore. And this is sad, because if you feel like you don't trust anyone in your life, then you're going to work on that, because approaching everybody with suspicion, it will become like a disease for you, unfortunately, and it will affect your communication so much that it will enable you with actually make you unable to communicate with other people. So keep that in mind. Number four, dealing the issue without weighing the pros and cons. Sometimes you're so biased, your mind is somehow brainwashed, and you're looking at everything from one angle. I do believe in that beautiful sentence that tells there is no complete dark or complete bright in this world. There is a mixture of them, especially about people. If there is no absolute bad or absolute good people in this world, everybody has a history, has a background, has a story which you're not aware of, and you have to just keep that in mind. You cannot be a part of everybody's life, you cannot be this, you cannot be that, but you have to understand that there are things you don't know about people, there are things you don't know about the life of people, about the story of them. You are being only a one chapter of this whole book, and you don't even haven't read the other chapters. So this is an important fact to remember. Number five, proceeding on the matter based on prejudice and rumors. This prejudice, unfortunately, is one of the diseases of the youth generation, the old generation. I see no difference here. I think the only thing that bridges the gap between generations is this prejudice. Actually, you can have prejudice on not having prejudice, but it's a fact. It's the truth. Let's go for the sixth one. Always being critical of oneself and others. Unfortunately, we are living in a world full of criticism, full of feeling like you have to criticize everyone, or you are not fully actually accepted in the society. This is a disease, really, really. Don't criticize too much yourself, too much others, and sometimes you have to take it easy. So let's go for a short break, then we're going to come back for the last part of the episode.
Your mercy, your love is on the knees. All I need is all I need. All I need. All I need. Oh, 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 oh. All I need. To be all I can be. And I know that you see how much you need.
IRIB English Radio for a Better Life. We're talking about the factors, the bad approach towards the issues. We're going to go for the number seven, not explaining the aim clearly, not having an opinion about future. When you cannot imagine your future clearly, or when you don't have a goal, then your bond with Allah Almighty will be loosened too. The bond with yourself is going to be weak too, okay? So this feeling of being clear with yourself, of having your standards, of having your own thoughts is really important. Go for that. Try to find your goal. Try to keep that in mind. This life in this world is not permanent. We're going to die every day, one day. And there would be an afterlife there for you. And you will see all the consequences of every little thing that you did in your life. So with just keeping that in mind, I think most of the problems we've solved and half of the way is past. Thank you for listening to me. It was all the time I have for today's episode. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israel's indiscriminate bombing of the Gaza Strip enters its 15th day. At least 53 more Palestinians are killed in the latest Israeli strikes across the besieged territory. Egypt opens a Rafah border crossing with Gaza to allow trucks carrying life-saving supplies into the besieged strip. And fresh pro-Palestine protests take place worldwide as anti-Israeli sentiments are growing over the regime's war on Gaza. Hello, everyone, and welcome to World News.